It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 304, and it's January the 15th, 1978. And on Dialogue Conspiracy this evening, I'm going to spend most of the program discussing the Power Control Group. I've spoke of different members of the Power Control Group on Dialogue Conspiracy through the years, but there's been an escalation of the power move, and I think that I should clearly define it and get it on tape and record for the people that subscribe to the tape so they can look back and forward to the moves that the persons make who are covering up the assassinations and the conspiracies. The name Power Control Group, PCG, was given by Richard E. Sprague, the researcher back east, who's done excellent work since 1970, started publishing in 1970 on the Kennedy assassination, and has done in-depth work into this group that do manipulate our lives through the use of political assassinations and their cover-up. I guess the best definition I could give of this Power Control Group, as I see it, or as I believe Richard Sprague sees it through his work, is that these people plan assassinations and they cover up assassinations, or they're part of the cover-up. There's certain people that I'm going to name in the Power Group that had absolutely nothing to do with the planning of the assassination of John Kennedy or Reverend Martin Luther King or Robert Kennedy or Malcolm X or the witnesses that come along, but they are very much a part of the cover-up, and they keep the news into little tight boxes so the average person cannot get information. If there's a lecture to be given, they get it. Usually if there's a talk show, they're on there. If there's a book to be published, they can get the book out. They are the front pieces or the show pieces for a large amount of work that's done by other researchers that simply can't get through because the information is screened by these particular people. I've referred on Dialogue Conspiracy to the Torbett document, and many people have bought this unpublished manuscript, and it is available, I think I mentioned last week, for $15. And the address is Box 1107, Aptos, California. And in that document about the cabal that killed John Kennedy and is responsible for other assassinations, they name specific lawyers that are part of the Power Control Group. There's men like F. Lee Bailey, Percy Foreman, Melvin Belli, Ramsey Clark, and those lawyers are, and Mr. Kunstler, those lawyers are allowed to handle these conspiracy cases. Nobody else gets to them. And when there is a major conspiracy, the evidence is concealed by their using very little of it for the defense of the witness or very little for the prosecution, the hard prosecution. Leon Jaworski comes from this Power Control Group. They have a group of lawyers that have been trained. There's newspaper people that are trained, and there are researchers that are trained, evidently, to suppress information. They're allowed to weave in and out of committees without giving information, have talks and lectures without giving too much information, and they can have regular conspiracy conferences, and you leave there without much new information, and you're diverted totally away from any of the new facts that are coming in. The Power Control Group has a big handle right now on Larry Flint and his operation, and because it's so close to me with Paul Krasner that I want to go into it and talk to you about that. I also want to talk a little more about Ed Davis. We stopped last week on Dialogue Conspiracy, and I didn't complete some thoughts about the San Quentin shootout, and I hope to get back to that. But I do want to get into the Power Control Group as it's moving west and east and south, because it's a problem that we researchers are going to have to face. We've faced worse problems, or just as bad. As long as you're aware of what's happening, you can confront it easier. The first of the year in January, I was very excited just before Christmas, as I mentioned before, when Paul Krasner told me that he would become publisher of Hustler magazine. He told me to write 3 pages a month, not to write about Lee Harvey Oswald. I could write about David Berkowitz, the son of Sam, and the MK Ultra program. That was the first control. Don't write anything on the Kennedy assassination. That means that Paul Krasner, who had published his Realist for many, many years, and then finally was broke. He ended up owing $25,000 to the printer, distributors, and everybody. He went broke because he refused to take ads in the Realist. It could have gone very far and been a large magazine, but he wanted to be his own boss, and he held out for so long that he went broke. And when he went broke, and Larry Flynt dangled $90,000 a year plus expenses, Paul Krasner fell for the bait, and he became a victim of the control group where he was limiting what I could write about. Whereas when Krasner got out the Realist, and in our relationship of interviews or whatever, there never was a limit to what I could say or write. And if you've read my articles in the Realist, you'll appreciate that fact. I was once asked why I gave my articles to the Realist, because it did have a reputation for being very scatological and not too clean. And I felt that Paul had integrity because he would allow all kinds of viewpoints and opinions in there, and he was sole owner with no strings attached. And I gave him my first three articles I ever published because I knew he wouldn't change them around or cut things out. He did leave the footnotes off of the SLA story, and he changed the title of The American Assassins, but outside of that, nothing at all was changed. A few weeks after I spoke to Paul, and at the time that he told me to write about Sam, I didn't realize that Larry Flynt was collecting between $63,000 and $100,000 to put up ads in 42 newspapers offering for information on the killing of John Kennedy. And I didn't know that information would have to go through Dick Gregory or Mark Lane. And I have always considered Dick Gregory and Mark Lane part of the power control group. The power control group, as far as the John Kennedy assassination goes, and this hasn't got to do with lawyers or oil industrialists and various corporations, the specific people involved in the cover-up of the Kennedy assassination are Robert Groden, who used to work for Time and Life, Mark Lane, who wrote Rush to Judgment. Mark came out from New York to Dallas when John Kennedy was killed and went to Marina Oswald, and she said, "Go away, I don't need you, my husband is guilty." He went to Marguerite Oswald, and she said, "My son was an agent," at which point Mark Lane took a powder and spent the next 13 years with Helen Markham on the grassy knoll, talking about the discrepancies in her testimony before the Warren Commission. Mark has no relationship going with Marguerite Oswald, even though it did become evident that the CIA did have assassination teams and that there were about 38 to 40 reasons to believe that Marguerite Oswald's son worked for the intelligence community. George O'Toole from the Central Intelligence Agency is working with Robert Groden and Mark Lane, and Paul Hawk lives in California. He's from the Defense Industry Lawrence Radiation Lab. He's a physicist from Berkeley. The Assassination Information Bureau, headed by Carl Oglesby, from Boston, with their offices in Washington, Dick Gregory, the comedian, are the major news media persons of the power control group that consist of handling the evidence or getting the committees in Washington. Dick Gregory could go to the Rockefeller Committee. I couldn't. Mark Lane could screen out any telephone calls and messages I have to the House Select Committee, but he can get through, and Robert Groden can get through and get books published without even owning copies of the Warren Commission hearings or being able to identify maybe 500 of the 552 witnesses by name. He knows very little about the case, and of course this appointment of Reverend Abernathy and a woman, Mrs. Smith, on the committee to decide who will get a reward for solving the Kennedy case consists of the power control group that's moved to Columbus, Ohio. Now, the cover-ups of the Kennedy assassinations went through several stages. And again, I say I want this very clearly so people can refer to this tape, and we won't have to go back over and over on various shows, because you'll understand what I'm referring to. The first cover-up of the John Kennedy assassination came with the Warren Commission. John Connally was the governor of Texas, and they were supposed to have a citizens' inquiry there, but immediately people suspected a conspiracy. So President Johnson appointed Gerald Ford, with Leon Jaworski representing Texas on the Warren Commission. John J. McCloy, president of Chase Manhattan Bank, worked with the Rockefellers all of his life. Alan Dulles, lawyer for the Rockefellers, the Chase Manhattan Bank, who was head of the CIA until John Kennedy fired him. And there was Senator Cooper and Senator Russell, the watchdog for the CIA in Congress, and Hale Boggs from Louisiana. The Warren Commission was meeting suspicions right along while they were working, but they locked up and closed their offices. And after 1968, when Robert Kennedy was killed and Martin Luther King was killed, Bernard Fensterwald opened up his committee to investigate assassinations in Washington. And that became the second location of cover-ups with their computers, funded by men like Lew Russell as conduit of money. He represented or worked with the House on American Activity, worked with Richard Nixon's internal security subcommittees. He went door-to-door, Bernard Fensterwald, with his committee to investigate assassinations. His cover was blown in 1972 when he was exposed as James McCord's lawyer. At that time, he was saying, James McCord was saying, if you press me too hard in this Watergate story, we'll burn every tree in the forest. That was a threat, and when they announced that Fensterwald was his attorney, everybody went lightly on James McCord and didn't dare touch what he would say in retaliation. The next layer of the cover-up of the Power Control Group, the third layer, was in 1975 when the Assassination Information Bureau appeared in Boston and had these lectures for 3 days on the assassination. And various researchers who were there were excluded, Sherman Skolnick and Penn Jones, myself, and Robert Salant doing the Wallace case, Bob Cutler's story of Chappaquiddick. A lot of the researchers with hard evidence of conspiracy were put in the side. Ted Chirac with the movie The Second Gun and the Robert Kennedy assassination were totally pushed aside, and the attention was given to Mark Lane and Robert Groden. They're the only ones allowed at the press conference, and they made themselves noticeable as the researcher, and anybody else was an embarrassment. Lane pushed at that time for the House Select Committee to open up the Kennedy assassination, and the fourth escalation of the Power Control Group was the movement of Mark Lane to Washington, D.C. in 1975. He moved up there with his committee. By 1976-77, the House committee was funded their $1 million for a 2 years investigation into the John Kennedy assassination and the Reverend Martin Luther King assassination. Mark Lane hasn't touched the Robert Kennedy assassination, even though he's very, very closely associated and stays with Don Fried in Los Angeles, who wrote a book on the Robert Kennedy assassination, who's making a movie on it. One of the clues of how exclusive the congressional group would be was that they wouldn't touch the Kennedy assassination or the Wallace shooting or the drowning of Mary Jo Kopechne at Chappaquiddick, even though those three would be the easiest to solve because they have direct links to the Hughes organization, to Howard Hughes, to Robert Mayhew, to Tony Lasowitz, to the Watergate defendants. They were excluded, and no mention of them was made. So Congress passed that money and has spent a year and $1 million, and with that, Mark Lane moved to California, and that's the next move of the Power Control Group after the Congressional Committee was set up. This was the fifth branch of the cover-up to start the Kennedy and King assassination. They will end their committee a year from now by saying Oswald didn't do it alone, but they don't know who did it, and that will cost the taxpayers $2 million and 2 years, and it's a massive cover-up. Mark Lane moved to California. He had to know something was coming down. He's a writer, attorney, lecturer. The committee back there has subpoena power. He moved there and bought a place to be there while they were working. He had no overt business in Los Angeles, and home base could be Los Angeles. And then out of nowhere, Larry Flynt bought the Los Angeles Free Press, which will now be a place for Mark Lane and Don Fried and Robert Groden and Dick Gregory and the Assassination Information Bureau to get out whatever they want to get out and suppress the rest. Ted Gandolfo called up the Free Press and offered them information and documents on the Kennedy assassination. They're coming out with an issue, and he was told that only Lane, Fried, Groden, Dick Gregory, and AIB could get articles into Flynt's magazine, the Los Angeles Free Press. Well, to understand Larry Flynt and Paul Krasner and where they're going and what's happening, I have to go into a sketch of this situation that was in the Washington Post and the San Francisco Chronicle today. It came out January the 15th. It says, Hustler's Publisher's Conversion, Larry Flint's Vision of Life. And they give a profile of a man who has flipped over, deeply religious, and it's impossible that he made this quick conversion in such a short time. It goes into his connections in Houston, Texas, Dallas, Texas, New Orleans, Colorado, and his magazine that he now owns in Los Angeles. And it's perfectly obvious now that the Larry Flint operation is going to be cover up the seventh layer of the power control group, and it has political overtones that in the end will make Lane and Krasner and all of them look very silly, and right now he's using them as a front, and I think the Hustler magazine is something to be watched for its implications. There's certain things of this article I'm going to share with you if you, I was on the verge of puking when I read them, but I'm going to read them to you for a preview of Larry Flint, who is turning his magazine over to Christ or God or whatever, and has asked Paul Krasner to be the publisher. In the meantime, the article begins by telling how the Lord talked to Larry Flint, and the first thing he told Flint, or Flint realized, that he had to give up his wife. Dick Gregory, who travels along with Flint, had headlines in the Berkeley Barb in San Francisco a few weeks when I was up there. Dick Gregory gives up sex for the next 10 years. I don't know who cares or what is happening. I think the prevalence of this sexual opinion reminds me of the early Roman Church and the abstinence of the nuns and the priests. And Dick Gregory is advertising that he's not having sex. So Larry Flint says that he talked with Jesus, and he said, I promised to see myself castrated, to look down with no sexual organs, and said, it's okay, God, if that's your will. He saw the Lord taking his wife away from him in accident or death, and the Lord was holding Lenny Bruce, half of Lenny Bruce. He didn't say if it was the half with his genitals or without, but he was in Bruce's arm. Larry Flint now says that LCF, those are his initials, mean Lord Christ the Father, and that LB for Lenny Bruce means Lord Behold. Flint just bought a $275,000 estate for his wife as a substitution for sex. She's to live in Evergreen, Colorado, and explains why he likes Colorado, because the mention of God on the state insignias, and she's living under a mountain dedicated to Christ. So he's purchased this for Christmas. He took her out with a salesman by helicopter and located this $275,000 estate. After that, his conversion took him away from home to Fayetteville, North Carolina, to be with Jimmy Carter's sister, Ruth Stapleton, and with the most extreme right-wing fundamentalists in the South, who call themselves the Christian Patriots. He went down there where he visits, among other people, visit Charles Colson, a White House plumber who worked with E. Howard Hunt and the assassination teams. And it's interesting that Flint is offering $1 million to find out who killed Kennedy. I think if he gave us $1 million, we'd find that Charles Colson and E. Howard Hunt had a little finger in the Wallace shooting, in the Capeschini drowning, in the Wilbur Mills murder, the Congressman Wilbur Mills. I think we would find a lot of things that Charles Colson had his finger in, or even the automobile accident of Murray Chotiner. It's interesting that he's meeting with the White House plumbers team member, while on the other hand, he's offering a reward for just the killing of Kennedy. Now, the patriotic Christian, the Christian patriot scares me. It reminds me of Nazi Germany. He calls himself a Christian patriot, and he defines himself as, he says, Christian patriots are to Christians what American patriots are to Americans. They are willing to die for their country. When I think of the links of Ruth Stapleton and Jimmy Carter to Mr. Brzezinski, and the possibility of a Cold War against Russia with a white Russian as heading our National Security Council and advising the president, and the propaganda lately against Russia, that I have article after article stepping up on the Cold War really escalating, even stories like the Russian flu and doing tongue and throat checks at airports. Now they're going to have doctors checking for people who come in from Russia. We're escalating this terribly, and he's beginning to talk about belonging to a group who are willing to die for their God and country. Then Flint began to join up, of course, with Bob Harrington from New Orleans, the home of Clay Shaw and the assassination teams from the Bay of Pigs, just coincidentally. Brother Bob is converting Christians like mad, and he seems to be the rolling minister around the South. Larry Flint bought him a 155,000 motor coach outfitted with all the accoutrements he needs, and he carries what he calls success sacks to turn people into preachers. Meanwhile, Flint's flying around the country in his own jet plane, looking for a 727 to buy, equipped with luxuries. There's mention in the article that Ruth Stapleton wants him to help finance a religious center near Dallas. I wonder how close to Dealey Plaza it is. And then Flint was in Houston, Texas, offering confessions and invited to the church to worship with Ruth Stapleton. And, of course, Houston, Texas is a city that's been mentioned with regard to Burt Lance and John Connolly's mutual banking interests with persons from Saudi Arabia. They're hitting all the great spots that have a reference or an association, in my mind, with the Kennedy assassination, the New Orleans, the Dallas, the Houston, and the extremist right-wing church group that Flint is in. I can see what happens now that Flint has this terribly obscene magazine, and attention is called to him by an arrest that no other publisher had. Men from Gallery, Playboy, Penthouse, none of those magazines were arrested, and Flint was arrested, and it got a lot of publicity. And then after he's arrested, the President of the United States' sister calls him and says, "I want to come stay with you." And now he becomes a national hero, and I'm wondering if the purpose here isn't to equate the other magazines with dirt, the magazines that are carrying articles, very good articles by Fletcher Prouty and other persons on the Trilateral Commission and Jimmy Carter. These magazines are carrying stories about the Mormons and the CIA and the assassination teams and the Hughes organization. And there's a lot of good material coming out, but the only one that publishes it is this type of girly magazine, that these magazines on the stands that carry political articles also are filled with a lot of nudity. So if Flint gets this great Christian conversion and sees God, then the others must be antichrist to continue what they're doing. If he changes his magazine, then they are the opposite of antichrist. And I can see a purge coming here to associate people who send information to those magazines as being dirty. Now, Althea Flint, his wife, has her home in Colorado Springs, as I say. He said the state motto is nothing without God. She'll reside at the foot of the mountain range called the Blood of Christ. And Larry Flint is saying that part of my calling is to enlist more Christians to become Christian patriots. And I hope he doesn't mean by that definition that they are going to be put into another war coming soon that we haven't been told about. He's going to turn his corporation into a nonprofit company to publish illustrated Bibles. He's going to produce spiritual and religious roots, and his new airplane will be decorated with religious symbols. Now, in summary, this is the way I see the whole thing. Nelson and David Rockefeller, of course, at the top of that triangle, the Power Control Group and the Chase Manhattan Bank, were instrumental, along with a lot of other people, in rearming Germany financially and psychologically, putting Hitler into power and promoting this anti-Semitic talk and the doctrines that Hitler used, and protecting Hitler and their agents when the war was over by not telling half of what the Nazis did while they were in action with their experiments. The Dulles lawyers, Alan Dulles the lawyer, with John Foster Dulles the Secretary of State, imported these Nazis into this country. Rockefeller with the Bilderberger Group and the Council of Foreign Relations do not wear armbands. They don't goose step, but they can finance through the government or otherwise their Fensterwalds and Colsons and Hunts and Liddy's and Robert Mardian and the Nazis that are in or out of government. And they can also arrange for Mr. Flint, who has unlimited money, 20 or 30 million just from the hustler, which is really hard to believe, and make him go from pornography to Jesus. And Flint now travels along with the president's sister, as I said, to locations, contacts in New Orleans, Colorado, Dallas, Houston, and mouthing some pretty dangerous and scary information. I can't believe that his big ad on Who Killed John Kennedy is going to pull in the answers. I'm very afraid of it. I called their office and gave information about my opinions on this subject. Ruth Stapleton may want to build some kind of Christian monument in Dallas. I wonder what it is or why she wants to do it. I wonder who selected the same people or three of the people that I saw at the Boston Conference as part of the power control group to work for Larry Flynt, namely Robert Groden, Dick Gregory, and Mark Lane. And what will they do with the information that's coming in? Mark Lane has told Ted Gandolfo that they're getting a lot of information on the assassinations. Will those witnesses be killed? Will the documents be turned around? What will happen? In 1976, I was so worried about this cover-up in November of 76 that I mimeographed a page and I inserted it in letters to congressmen and public officials and different persons doing research. And it had to do with the World Nazis and Walter Dornberger, and specifically Mark Lane. And I asked the question, and I'll read to you what I wrote in 1976, because we're starting 1978, and it's just as pertinent with these people in a position of controlling the L.A. Free Press, the Hustler, the information coming in that replaces Bernard Fensterwald's committee. This is what I asked in 1976. Why have Mark Lane and Bernard Fensterwald, George O'Toole, Robert Sam Anson, the Boston-based Assassination Information Bureau, and the researchers around Mark Lane protected the Nazi links to the Kennedy assassination? Why are they protecting Ruth Payne and Lee Harvey Oswald's links to Michael Payne when Michael Payne was employed by war criminal Walter Dornberger at Bell Aircraft? Bell Aircraft, like Hughes Aircraft, has used contracts for the Vietnam War. Ruth Payne was responsible for Lee Harvey Oswald's getting the job at the Texas School Book Depository. Clay Shaw was linked directly to the world Nazis of World War II, Nazi General Reinhard Gehlen, and the CIA, and Alan Dulles. November 1976, none of the above researchers wrote or lectured or suggested any role that Marina Oswald, Ruth Payne, Michael Payne, and the entire Russian Solidarist group with their links to Nazis, Young Americans for Freedom, and the Gehlen spies in Russia. None of these were mentioned by any of the above researchers regarding Marina and Lee Oswald. Why this silence after 13 years, and now it's 14 years? Why is there effort to discredit those people who are the closest to the truth? To leave the Nazis out of the Kennedy assassination is identical to leaving Howard Hughes out of Watergate. We saw the cover-up before. They will happen again, these cover-ups. The question is why, and the question is how long. Now, the answer is this is a year later, a year and 2 months later since I wrote that, and we have a new source of cover-up. I don't know what Larry Flynt's going to do with Hustler. I know that I will not write for it. I certainly could use the money. Paul Krasner said I could have $500 a month to write a three-page article. I could use it very easily to buy books and tape recordings or my reels and postage stamps and long-distance calls, but I would not do anything. I will submit to Paul Krasner what he told me not to submit, and that is a three-page story on Lee Harvey Oswald. I'll mail it to him this week, and if he doesn't print it, he absolutely is taking orders from them, and if he prints it, he's his own boss. But I can't believe that there's any way that this isn't going to come to a lot of pain to people who send in information. They should be very careful and think twice, and they should challenge the whole operation there in Columbus, Ohio. There's an ad by Larry Flynt in Moore Magazine in October 1977 with a picture of Lenin and just his address and telephone number with an anti-communist face. I think he means that these Christian patriots will use their energy for another war. I think we could be on the brink of another war, just like we went in the Vietnam War. It could be the Middle East next time, and we'll be tested. I think this is a serious game they're playing. We'll watch it in the future. That's my analysis of the power control group on the Kennedy assassination. We'll watch it. I hope I'm wrong, but this is the way I see it today. This is Mae Brussel. It's Carmel, California. I'll see you next Sunday night on Dialogue Conspiracy.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel.
I get a station out over here.
Just do it and put it for 9 o'clock.
Okay.
I didn't know if you wanted to do
it. No, I want to do it.
It's really good.